It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
Calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland. I was almost blown away. We had what was known as a weather bomb the last couple of days, which is seemed a little bit hyperbolic, but it was bad, but I don't think it was explosive. But anyways, I'm still here, so that's the main thing.
Is that was that the bomb include snow?
No snow. It was just high winds.
Okay.
110, 120.
Oh damn. Oh wow. It's like, is that like borderline tornado, or is tornadoes faster than
that? We've actually had winds like that before, so it's, I don't know what the big whoop was, but anyways, you know, it happens.
Yeah, we had like 60 kilometer winds today, I think.
Well, all the out there in Sontalk land, why don't you send us an email and tell us how fast the winds were in your local neighborhood.
In your neck of the woods.
Yes.
Fallen trees, whatever. All right. And while you're at it, send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Facebook or Instagram. Feedback at songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, to find links to resources we mentioned, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Tonight, in the family, and the extended family, actually, today we're happy to start the listeners' answers to our songwriting challenge for 2025, which has been to write a song in an odd time signature. So, of course, if you don't hear your song tonight, stay tuned for a future episode. We will be going through them. Before we get to that, though, how is your song coming along, Phil?
It's been a challenge that I thought it was going to be. I had never recorded anything in this kind of a unusual time signature, and I've never written anything in an unusual time signature. So it's been a very been a challenge. I'm working in 7/8, 7/4. 7/8 and 4/4.
Oh, nice.
What was weird is after a while, when I was doing 7/4, it started to sound so normal that I was kind of looking at it going, hold it, is this wrong? It's been a challenge to play this stuff because I'm just so used to 4/4. And then, of course, actually trying to record it through my DAW has been a bit of a challenge because it has a whole bunch of tools I've never used before.
Right.
You know, there's like time signature events in Cubase that I use. And sometimes if you're moving things around, they don't necessarily move with the rest of the events on your arrange page. But that also might just be because I don't know how to do it.
Mm.
But it's been a great challenge. And I'm actually starting to like what I'm coming up with. So I'm, so I think it's going to be okay.
Nice. Glad to hear it. Yeah. And good. And interesting, I guess that would be the case if you've never done anything like this in your digital audio workstation too, that would open up some doors and see what it takes to do that sort of thing.
When you record at home and you're using your DAW, it's easy to fall into loop based arrangements because that's what the tools kind of want you to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, very often your tools will dictate the kind of things you create.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's always those default, you know, 4/4, 120 BPM.
Oh yeah.
You know, as soon as when you open up a new file. So
actually, I wonder how many more pieces have been released at 120 ever since the home recording revolution started.
That's a good question. I wonder if anyone's actually studied that, because that would be an interesting thing. I mean, you know, but why did every DAW developer pick 120? Like they all kind of, I've only used two or three DAWs over my entire life, and they've all faulted to 120. I don't know.
That is a good question, actually. I never really thought about that.
Was it supposed to be some kind of a standard, or is it just?
I do not know. Well, maybe someone can out there in listener land can send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca and let us know.
Okay. I might ask Gemini a little bit later and see what they have to say.
Okay.
see what kind of hallucination you can come up with. Answer,
yeah,
I'll
just make stuff up.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay. So, let's get into the listener songs. And thanks to all listeners who have been sending in your songs. That's really cool. We're going to start with Old Woolly. who sent us a song called Driving Through the Desert. And he writes to us and he says, "Hi, Neil and Phil. I'm Old Wooly and I write and sing Australian country songs from Melbourne, Australia. I've been keen to write something for your songwriting challenge, so I've put together Driving Through the Desert for you all to listen to. I hope that you like it. My goal was to write a song, a country song, in 5/4. The lyrics were about traveling with friends in the deserts of Central Australia for a while when I was younger. I had a hook line and which felt unresolved due to the 5/4, so I added a post-chorus section in 6/8 time, which summarized the theme and evened things out. With respect to recording and arrangement, I tried to keep things simple, not spending any time on technical issues, and just got it recorded. Although I think about re-recording parts, I feel that I would end up fiddling with it too much and it might lose some of the nativity that gives it its charm. Enjoy, Old Wooly."
Yeah.
Thanks, Old Wooly. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. 5/4 and then...
It's a good song, too.
Yeah, it's a great song. 5/4 and then a post-chorus section in 6/8. So
wow.
Stay tuned for that. And Old Wooly, of course, has he's actually labeled it on his lyric sheets when the 6/8 kicks in. So be sure to check out the lyric sheet on the show post so you can follow along and count the time. And I'll admit, with this song, I kind of found it a little bit. I kind of got lost in it. You know, like I kind of lost in the 5/4 because it's not all that clear necessarily. The 6/8, of course, falls into an expected kind of rhythm. But actually upon the second listen of this, I was getting into the 5/4 a little bit more. It didn't seem as odd as it did the first time.
It's probably a smarter way of doing it because they're actually playing real live instruments.
Hmm.
So she's not fighting with the duh, but actually from trying to play an unusual time signature, trying to actually play properly in like 7/4 or something you're not familiar with, it's really hard. So, yeah. You know, they did a really great job. It is a great song, actually. It's really good.
Yeah, yeah. It is difficult when you do a nice all time signature to sort of play it live and play it smoothly so that, you know,
yeah,
it feels like it has a groove. Right? Because if it isn't awkward, if you form it in a slightly awkward, if there's some hesitancy or some thing that's not quite aligning right, then it can feel kind of funny and bring attention to the oddness of it.
It also makes you realize how much you know about playing your instrument now, because you've played your instrument and, you know, you're very good at playing in 4/4 and maybe even 3/4, but it's weird kind of going back to that stage where you're really not sure what's going on and it's you're kind of struggling. And I mean, it's good. And it's a challenge, which is why we call the songwriting challenge, but I think you did a pretty good job.
All right, let's take a listen. This is Driving Through the Desert by Old Wooly.
3/4/5. Bacon and sausage, desert morning. A frost upon my swag last night. We saw the stars. Driving through the desert with you, surrounded by dust and silence, waiting for a camel's herd to pass. Meteor flashing through the heavens brought me back to earth, back here next to you. Driving through the desert with you, surrounded by dust and silence, waiting for a camel to pass. Yes, it seems like forever, I know, but it's not. Let's just sit here while we can. Stop when the road splits and dingo's footprints. A kangaroo gone by redder on the bluest sky. Driving through the desert with you, surrounded by dust and silence, waiting for a camel's herd to pass.
Nice. What a vibe. Holy cow.
Driving through the desert with you is a great hook. I mean, it really kind of grabs the ear really nicely. And that, and when he goes in the camel to pass is really a wonderful little hook.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a lot of little hooks in here. The driving through the desert with you. So let's get to the 5/4 bit, because that little guitar, like, that really gives you the sort of anchor to hold on to identify where the 5/4 is happening. And then the kick drum is always happening on the one of the five, right? So you can sort of count that way, but he does play with the melody a lot. Like there's melodies that don't sort of, like the end of his verse section, you know, we see the stars, and that actually comes down on the one of the 5/4 bar, right? So it actually kind of feels resolved. But when he gets to that driving through the desert with you, the melody feels like a 4/4 melody.
It does, yeah.
Right, and it's almost like he's doing that that polyrhythm thing. Which, by the way, I forgot to mention this on last week's show. When I did my songwriting challenge, I kept calling it compound time. I was wrong.
Oh, right.
Compound time is actually any normal time signature that's like not 4/4, I think, like a 6/8 is a compound time. But what I was doing was a polyrhythm, where you're writing two time signatures on top of each other.
Yeah.
It's called there's polymeter, and then there's polyrhythm.
What's
and people get them mixed up all the time. And I'm currently polymeter? Getting them mixed up all the time. Exactly.
Well, 2 meters, sure. I guess.
Polymeter. On the episode where I did my song, we actually posted a video, a YouTube video that explains the difference.
Okay.
Between the two. but the one thing is clear, it's compound time is not time signatures running together. This is a polyrhythm, where it sounds like a 4/4 melody over top of 5/4 guitar lick. So it has this really, so it, as catchy as it is, it does have this kind of really weird thing to it.
Well, and it resolves nicely too at the end of the phrase. Mm-hmm. One of the issues with this is when we I'm working on something and I listen to one of our listener songs and I go, oh, okay, maybe I should try something like that. So, which is tough, because then you keep on sort of going back and you never complete it, because normally I start off with a musical idea and take that musical idea forward, where this time I'm trying to sort of solve a musical problem.
Mm.
One of the things I think he did intelligently is when he's doing an odd time signature, he's not also doing unusual extended chords. I mean, they're very 1/4, 1/5.
Mm-hmm.
With apart from the driving through the desert with you.
Yeah.
And I think that might be if anyone still wants to try the challenge, is actually to not try to make it too chordally complex and just focus on the time, because doing the time signatures will be tough enough.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I've become more acutely aware of the last couple of years now is this, you know, I've brought this up many times now on the podcast, complexity versus simplicity.
Yeah,
right. Like if you're doing something like a odd time signature, which is adding complexity, then one of the other elements of your songwriting could be simple. Like you say, just use major minor triads or 1/5, 1/4, that sort of thing. Right. It should be fine. What do you think of the 6/8 section? Does that really feel grounded when he hits the 6/8 section?
It does. I think it actually kind of resolves the phrase in sort of a nice way.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a great way of handling it. And I mean, I'm working in 7/4 and 7/8, which are related, and then 4/4, which I'm just doing because I couldn't figure out how to play my hook in 7/8. But so 5/4 and 6/8, I wouldn't think would go together, but they seem to go together pretty good, I think.
Yeah, because actually when you count it, it's like the verses are sort of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a pretty fast 5/4, or you could even consider it a 5/8. Because when the kit, the post chorus, the eighth note is still the same. It's still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Right.
Whereas before it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the eighth note is the common denominator.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Right. So I would even argue that this is 5/8 and 6/8.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you give it that common, it's not a fraction, but common denominator.
Yeah.
And then it makes it easier to sort of follow along between the sections.
Oh, that's true. One thing I liked about his lyrics is he talked about his world, like kangaroos and dingoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, desert. Yeah. And this happens at our meetups when, you know, someone, especially in Toronto, which has lots of international people living there. So you have lots of people from, you know, Spain or Iraq or something, and they come in and they sing really North American songs. And yeah. I understand that they're doing it because that's the music they've grown up with and that's the music they love. But I'm always thinking, well, why don't you write something in your own language or talking about your world, which is different than my world, and a little bit about this. Anyone listening to the song knows it's about Australia.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And not in a really obvious way. I think it's just, you know, this is part of his world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, aside from the kangaroo and the dingo, this might be Death Valley.
That's true. Well, he says something about a camel, I think, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. And the camel. Okay, fine.
Although I know there were camels in Australia.
I don't know. I mean, camels and desert just kind of go together, I guess. But yeah,
I guess,
in Saudi Arabia or whatever. But
they probably swim. Yeah,
I really like the image of the red earth under the blue sky. Like that's kind of a cool.
Yeah,
that really paints the picture. It's so simple, but
yeah,
it totally does. And so and the desolation. Like last night, we saw the stars, which means you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh yeah,
surrounded by dust and silence. You are in the middle of nowhere.
That's true,
right? And if you can see all the extent of red earth and the extent of the blue sky, then yeah, you're in the middle of nowhere, and that's what the Australian outback is, right?
yeah, it's a really fun song, and kudos on doing it with real instruments.
Yeah.
That'd be a challenge.
Yeah, because even whoever's playing the drums here seemed like at times they weren't sure what the time signature was. It was a little bit like kind of falling over and stuff. Like, oh, is that okay? Where's the one? Okay, there we go. And then just kind of hitting things almost pseudo random. But he's right. You know, if he goes to quote unquote produce this, you know, more professionally than and more polished, then it might lose some of that quirkiness, some of that unique,
yeah,
you know, weirdness factor.
Yeah, it's, well, because it sounds like you're out on the outback.
Yeah,
you know, it sounds, you know, like you're, yeah, it's a really fun song. Right?
Yeah,
I laughed out loud when I listened to it. It was great.
Yeah, you can almost hear, like, you know, I almost get the picture of like just by the rhythmic weirdness of this, because the odd time signature and everything. You almost picture, like, you know, some dude walking through the desert with pots and pans that are clanging
in 5/4.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's a really good idea.
Slung over his back. That could be the release poster.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Very, very, very image rich and just very cool. And no bridge, you know, don't think you need it.
Well, again, I think what you said is it's a really good point is when you're, especially when you're doing something complex that you're not used to doing, having other things simple is not just easier, but probably better because it's harder to handle complexity on top of complexity.
Oh, actually, he does label on his lyric sheet a bridge in 5/4, but I thought that was another verse. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't.
Well, it didn't sound very bridgy to me, so.
Yeah. But I mean, according to his chords, it's different. It's like A minor, F, C, G, whereas the verses are just G and C. Yeah, maybe he wants another listen to really figure out if that bridge is what it needs to be, kind of thing, or what it wants to be.
That's true.
But, you know, but that could have been another verse, say, and that, you know, would have been perfectly fine, probably.
Yeah. You know, it's a fun little tune.
Shall we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Paul Gallagher. Of course, he's a good friend of our meetup and has been a regular at the meetup for quite a while. And okay, so Paul writes to us, says, "Hi, Neil and Phil. Thanks for having this challenge. I enjoy listening to your podcast and joining you guys for the live and online meetups. Emotional Stranger, which is the title of a song, Emotional Stranger wasn't written with the challenge in mind. I had a personal experience in a social situation, and I wanted to explore my own experience and also consider what others might have experienced. The lyrics were started, as I usually start with the lyrics, but before finishing, I wanted to see what chord changes might work. In my process, I always get some rhythm in mind based on what I'm trying to convey in the narrative. I knew I was going to start with only two chords and probably keep on those for a while. As soon as I played the first two chords, a rhythm came up. I kept playing them and it seemed easy enough. I had no idea what the time signature was. Finally, when I got to writing the chart, I thought I should check the time signature. It took a while fooling around with the metronome to discover that it was in 7/8. I wanted the chord progression for the chorus to be simple for the most part. I used more complex chords where the lyrics express complex ideas. So here it is, Emotional Stranger, 13 revisions later. Thanks for all the work. It really is appreciated, Paul Gallagher. I mean, Paul writes pretty quirky songs on the regular, let alone if there's 7/8. So,
and he's someone who really puts in the time. I think he's always on our, he's a very active member in our community, and he's part of the, couple of other songwriting communities. So he's, I assume he's retired. He seems to have lots of time.
He's retired. Yeah. And he's very good, like at the meetup too, about giving feedback to other songwriters. Like I've even reached out to him for songs I'm writing and asked for his feedback directly. Right. And he's always happy to share and very particular about, he's very keen on the details that where the music lines up with the lyric, like how does that happen and what does it mean all that sort of stuff. He's very keen on those sorts of details.
Yeah.
So, we've got a lot of, I don't understand his chord sheet. Is this, he's writing out the notes of the chords, I think, right? When he puts ACE/E, then in brackets, he puts A minor over E.
Yeah, it is a little bit.
And then GBD over E, yeah, is a G over E, which is really just an E minor 7. But anyway,
maybe it's his way of handling his voicing.
Yeah, quite possibly. And whatever works for you, you know, like we've had this thing on the podcast before about you know, possibly expressing stuff on the page. You know, even if it like a G over E. You know, is that less complex than an E minor 7?
Yeah.
Debatable, maybe. Maybe that's easier for someone to think about on a piano is G over D. I don't know about for guitars. If I see a G over E as opposed to an E minor 7.
Yeah.
Is that easier or harder to play on the guitar? I don't know.
I mean, there's two levels of guitar players. There's most of us, which are, you know, self-taught, and we kind of crash around. Right.
Yeah.
And then there's people who are actually, you know, taught, and that's kind of different things. For most self-taught people, we actually just use shapes and like we know about the other parts of the words, but you use largely shapes and patterns. So it's an interest. Maybe we could send him an email and find out why he has those, like he has them in red and then in sort of green.
Yeah.
Next to them. So what's the thinking about GBD?
Yeah, it might just be a voicing thing, but they're all the red markings are voiced in first position, like they're all with the one of the chord on the bottom. Oh, except for the D minor over B flat, F A D. Well,
no, he has an A minor with an E in the bass, the first one. So that's A C E with E on the bass.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the ACE is always A first, right? It's always the one first.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes.
It's not CEA. It's not ECA.
But I mean, the slash E means it's second inversion because that's the fifth in the bass.
Yes.
So technically, for going from low to high, the first one would be E, but
mm-hmm.
He's a piano player, and I always find it weird when I see piano players just playing triads. Maybe that's how you do it.
Well, it works. And again, like we're saying with old Woolly song, like you got on-time signature, so keep the harmony relatively simple, I guess.
Yes.
But yes. Of course, there's a lot of inversions with the variable bass thing.
Paul is a Jazzer. Shall we take a listen?
Let's take a listen. Emotional Stranger by Paul Gallagher.
Of highway, two cars instead of one. They thought they were doing such a good thing. They were totally wrong. Teflon conversation, life of assumption, clueless attention.
These turns of phrases that are somewhat, they might be giantish.
Mm, yeah.
You know, which I always thought kind of like, you know, emotions are strange.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a lyric I would ever write, but it's kind of really cool. Because they are, you know. And then emotional strangers, sort of playing all those off. I thought that was cool.
People are strange. I had a little trouble finding the 7, did he say 7-4 or did he say 7-8?
I think he said 7-8.
You think he said 7-8? Yeah, I discovered it was in 7-8. Because the drums, I know he uses Apple Logic as his DAW, and I feel like I can always tell when it's the Logic drummer, because Logic drummer, you just load it up and it's supposed to drum for you, but it's usually, the default settings, Logic drummer are way too busy. He's constantly filling. Yeah. It's like no real drummer would do this.
If you're doing this kind of thing and you're using any kind of a drum VST is to, again, because if you're not used to this, is start off with a basic drum beat or your basic drum beat for your piece and kind of stick with it.
Yeah.
Without getting too fancy, because it's like doing a fill in 7/8 is not.
Oh.
I don't even know how you do that.
Yeah, you have to work it and figure it out. That's all. you just have to figure it out. No, there's no trick. But really interesting. And he's like really, really short phrases. Like everything's a very, very short phrase.
Yes.
They were totally wrong. Teflon Conversations, Life of Assumptions, Clueless, A Dangerous Cocktail.
Yeah.
Emotions Are Strange. But like there's nothing that's a long phrase. Like everything's a you know, which makes it kind of, I don't know. There's something of a nervous energy to the whole thing. I feel like
that is true, actually, and it's you know, he's such a jazzer, and he has all these extended chords, which are nice. I like the This is a treasure, or is it a curse? Could be better, could get worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cute. That was cute. Yeah. The chorus, if anything, you know, it's actually one of the strongest choruses I've heard Paul write. Mm. In that the melody lifts up. It's much more kind of clear. What the structure is.
Yes. And the emotional stranger that really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So and I feel like with all his chord extensions and things, it really blurs the lines of harmony. Like it kind of feels like everything's kind of, you know, it's not a 1-4-5
no
sort of contrast, right? Yeah. It's just kind of like everything's kind of muddles. You know, into this kind of harmonic soup kind of thing, right?
Yes, he's got lots of chords.
Yeah, and he's changing chords very like this is an old Woolly song. It's like G G G G G G G G C C G G G G. It's like okay, right? Whereas Paul, he's like he's flipping chords every two beats, but there's seven beats in the bar, so
even the even his chorus is different.
What, different time signature?
First three different lines are the same. Fourth line, sometimes the fifth line is different. Well, yeah, one, he calls one B flat 9, the other one D diminished with an F in the bass. I'm not sure what these, maybe C. Yeah, it's like I'm not used to looking at chords this way, so I'm...
You ever heard the term functional harmony?
I've heard the term, yes.
You know what it means?
No,
I'm not entirely sure what it means, but I do have some idea what it means. It means like when we talked about, we had our episode about cadences, right? The function of the five chord is the dominant chord. Mm. The function of the two chord could be also a sort of dominant chord to bring you back to the one. It's a 2-5-1 has a sort of. In other words, it plays a function. What does it do in terms of the storytelling of the song?
Right.
Right. What's its role in the whole structure of the song? Right.
Right.
You know, and I feel like Paul could use a little bit of that because the chords are so, like I said, so like,
yeah.
So muddled that it even makes the sections a little bit fuzzy line. Like unless the bridge was written on the lyric sheet, I don't think I would have popped that out as a bridge. Like I wouldn't have identified that as a bridge.
Really? Yeah. I'll push back on that because I think like the bridge, it sounded different enough.
Yeah.
The way you sang it was different enough. Like the chorus was the chorus and the verse was the verse. I think it was pretty clear in the outro. It was outro. I think, it's the sections are very clear to me.
Hmm. Yeah. The chorus certainly pops out as a chorus. Yeah, for
it's
sure.
A good chorus.
Yeah, it is a very strong chorus.
I hope Paul takes this song and develops it a bit more.
Yeah.
it's late here in St. John's because I think it's kind of cool, and I think you know if he could maybe find like a. You know, upright bass player and maybe a drummer to groove to it. And you could have I could see a sax going on this. And I think that was.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally.
The outro is really strong, though. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, it's got great bones. It's got great ideas. Yeah, I think it could use a little more polish in the parts. Like old Woolly, they had that definite little guitar lick that really.
Yeah.
Zeroed it in and nailed it down, right?
Yeah.
You know, if there was a little piano lick that Paul came up with that I'm sure he could, you know, that really identified where the 7-8 falls.
Yeah, that's true. It's the thing with the doing compound time, but doing
polyrhythm.
Doing compound time, doing unusual time signature. Is being cognizant of the where your tensions hit, where your strong beats and your weak beats hit. And I think first, because most people are not familiar with unusual time signatures, you want to kind of hit it really hard. Like, you know, make sure your strong beats are very strong and always in the same spot so that people can kind of follow along. Right. Now, in other cultures, they have different time signatures, and I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do listen to Dave Brubeck, that's something that he does.
Yeah.
He has very consistent strong beats and weak beats. It's clear where the counts are. And he's a jazzer, but, he's kind of written in a way that is very clear.
And that is one approach. And there is another approach that says, I don't want to play them strong. I want to leave them a little bit fuzzy. And maybe that's what Paul was trying to do. He wasn't trying to make it terribly clear. He just wanted that feeling of unease.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about Salisbury Hill. I don't know if that really has strong beats. Dun,
dun, dun. It's pretty strong. It's a pop tune, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like one and two. It's like one and two and one and two. And every now and then it is a one.
And it's got that, dun, 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 dun. It's got that guitar lick that, that plays the seven and it carries the whole song through, right?
It would be interesting though, just next time we talk to Paul, we'll ask him about the two different donations of the chords and how it helps him, because maybe it's a great system.
It's really interesting when you think about like how all these things got developed and how all things got standardized, like.
Yeah,
I think there was a YouTube video I saw where some group of people were trying to say sheet music is not the best way to represent music.
Yeah, well,
and clearly it isn't. It doesn't tell you everything about a piece of music, right? The only thing that can do that is the music itself.
Yeah,
and that's impossible to. It's impossible to take music in its essential form and transcribe it onto a piece of paper. Like it just. You know what I mean? Like it's impossible. I think it's close to impossible anyway to represent it in another way that's not music and have it 100% reflect what the music is.
But that's an interesting point. Because I wonder if the medium, medium always does affect the art.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if the medium of writing music down in a very structured and formulated way sort of shaped Western music.
Mm.
Like classical music, like people like Bach, they kind of wrote in a kind of a very structured way because that's the way you wrote the stuff down. Whereas in other cultures, because I think in Indian music, it's mostly done by ear. Like it's communicated by people, isn't it? It's not as opposed to...
Yeah, yeah. The classical stuff is mostly oral. It's more oral and by ear. Yeah, yeah. And by virtue of that, there's not necessarily any standardization. So it varies from village to village, from community to community.
Exactly. So which kind of gives it a bit more freedom. Yeah, I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, because it is a way of codifying it, right? And anyway, this video I saw was basically talking about how sheet music is not good enough, and we need a better way to denote music. And you know, it's one of those things you take for granted because you learn it in school and you kind of, this is, you know, every good boy deserves fudge. Come on. How could it be any clearer than that?
I went through a period where I did try to learn how to read music. And I mean, I can read music, but it's very, very slow. My problem is my ear is so developed that I can hear something like a couple of times and pick it up. But like going through it on paper, it just takes me forever. And I'm just thinking, can I get a tape of this? You gotta force yourself to do what you're not good at.
And it's true, and that's just it. Like I grew up on sheet music. I had, I would borrow from the music department in high school. I would borrow all the sheet music books. And I would go to Dave Steiner Music at Yonge and Lawrence here in Toronto. That was a staple. I would go there constantly and buy sheet music books and things like that. And I would sit down on the piano and read the music and play the music. And that was how I learned how to play piano.
Wow.
Right? And which means that my ear wasn't doing a lot of work.
Right, right.
Figure things out, right? So to this day, I still struggle. I'm slower at figuring things out.
Right.
You know, I'm getting better at it because I'm practicing it more, and I'll, you know, I'll listen to a song and be like, oh yeah. And I just turn on the piano. I was like, oh yeah, what chord is that? Okay, I got it now. And, but I'm also applying some of my theory knowledge. I mean, like, it sounds like it's going to a 4. It sounds like it's going to a 5. Is that it? Yeah. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, that stuff does help. But you know, that's the whole point of these songwriting challenges, is getting you to do stuff that you don't do easily, because that's how you grow as an artist, I think.
For sure. Excellent. All right.
What a great, great tunes. We've got some other great listener tunes coming up, too. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. It's really going to be cool. All right. I'm here in the band. That's all the time we have on the show. This has been Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to Old Willie and Paul Gallagher and all our listeners for sharing their challenge answers with us. Again, if you didn't hear your song tonight, stay tuned for a future episode. In the next couple of weeks, we will be featuring all the songs that we get. We want to hear from you too, so please send us your comments on Facebook or Instagram to @songtalkradio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca, and be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes, and subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider, and please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thank you to everyone who has supported us so far.
Thank you.
You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And please join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. Whether you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. Phil?
PhilEmery.ca.
And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in, and
keep on writing.
Lots of different time signatures.